This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 30th of July 2012 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the 42nd edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Douglas Adams, author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, had it that 42 was the answer to life, the universe and everything. We think every culture show is that all-encompassing, but we'll find a theme and stick with it. So as the Olympic rings rule over us for the next few weeks, we're giving over a whole show to the art of sports commentary. Fear not, this won't all be about the finer points of two-man coxless skulls or how to spot a straight takedown in the women's 49-kilogram taekwondo, but also about the larger world of commentating on ball games, about running, kicking, playing. We'll celebrate some of TV and radio's finest voices. We'll also nod towards that rich seam of musical form, the theme tunes that accompany many a sport. We'll hear from Henry Blofeld, one of the unmistakable voices of BBC Radio's cricket commentary team.
There are going to be, as it were, the die-hard cricket listeners in Yorkshire or Lancashire or wherever who are going to say, well, it's Blofeld rabbits on about anything and everything. You should tell us more about the cricket.
We'll find out how China's Wang Dong learns the rules of the many sports at which his homeland excels.
I learned a lot how to, you know, really adjust yourself to the technical part of it, so how to get your teammate involved to be a team, to do the coverage well, etc. I think that was a great experience.
And we'll take you to the rolling hills of New Zealand to speak to the producer of the hit show based around sheepdog trials to hear what a difference a great commentator can make to the most unlikely sports.
He involved, if you like, the viewing public with his style of commentary. And I don't know whether it would have worked without him because of his knowledge of dog trialing, and he knew the people.
On our world tour of sports commentators, we'll also stop by in Russia, Australia, the US and Ireland, where a certain voice was just made for the radio. That's all here on Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24.
And that was, a stumping, the ball coming off Sunny Musev's nerves and going onto the leg stump as Srikant was aiming to turn the ball round the corner. Well, that was an unlucky dismissal for India.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the sound of How to Do It. Henry Blofeld has been a stalwart of BBC Radio's Test Match Special Commentary Team since 1973. Blowers, as he's known, possesses a singular style that is at once informal, excitable, discursive and obsessed with many of the off-pitch details. Buses, cranes, what people are wearing and drinking in the crowd. He's such a pro that despite having the flu, he still took time to talk to us on the phone.
I've always been passionate about cricket. One of my great friends is Peter O'Sullivan, and if he had to talk about a cricket match, I think he'd find himself scratching his head, and soccer commentators too. I mean, I don't think it, I'm lucky that it's cricket, only to the extent that I am passionate about cricket. If I was passionate about football, I wouldn't be happy to be doing cricket, you know, and one would be doing it at a different tempo. I think that cricket, because of its sort of timelessness, more so than any other game, it gives you time to be discursive when a fast bowler bowls a maiden over and the batsman plays a dozen players a single ball. You've got time to fill in, you've got time to go beyond the boundary, you've got time to talk about the weather, in my case, the helicopters and the pigeons or what have you, or what people are wearing in the crowd, you know, and that sort of thing. You've got time to try and paint the picture.
And you mentioned Peter O'Sullivan. Obviously, that sort of commentary is done at a far faster pace. And there's a sort of bit of a down period, or it's wet in a test match. Do you sort of have some stories in reserve that you know that
no,
you...
No, I've never been into a commentary box in my life with anything in reserve to say in 41 years. I can honestly tell you, it always totally off the cuff. I mean, now it's when rain or bad night stops play. I mean, I've watched 500 odd test matches, I suppose. And therefore, memories come feeling back. But you see what we do in TMS. And I think what makes it the program it is, and why it's as popular as it is as much because of its non-cricketing content as because of its cricketing content. I mean, when rain or bad night stops play, we carry on talking about anything and everything. And many of our listeners write in and say how much better we are when nothing's happening than when the cricket's going on. It shows you how bad we must be when the cricket's on.
I think you should try and take that as a compliment. And obviously the way Test Match Special works is it sort of goes in sort of washes of 20 minutes on the mic and then you come back maybe an hour and a half later.
You come back and it's the three of you, you're 20 minutes every hour.
And do you want there to be an exciting passage of play, obviously, to talk about, or would you rather watch that when the mic's not open?
My job is what I look forward to is describing what's ahead of me. I mean, if it's a dull piece of play, then you tend to get wander over the boundary. If the cricket's exciting, you don't leave the cricket. It's as simple as that. I don't think one ever anticipates and wants anything to happen. You just tell people what is happening. I mean, I have never had any preconceived plans for action or for anything ever since I've been doing it. I mean, you go in there and you've got so much in front of you to describe. I mean, a television commentator is constricted to the monitor, to the picture on the screen, which he's got to add to or explain or whatever. But with us, we have a 360-degree angle of view. And therefore, you can go anywhere. And there are always things to talk about. It just depends on what you choose.
And there are different sorts of commentary. Obviously, television commentary is necessarily different to that on the radio. But there are some commentators, even in the TMS box, are fonder of talking about players' reputations, facts and stats and things like this. Your style is more discursive, Henry. Despite nailing the action on the field, there is a little bit more of a sort of Woodhousean element, if I may say so, to it.
Fair enough. I mean, I've not done it consciously. I'm always thinking painting the picture is an important thing. You've got to try and tell the listener where you are, what you can see, so he can position himself and use his imagination more freely. And personally, I think statistics and endless details about what players have done is the biggest, most boring thing in the world. I personally don't want to listen to it. I think statistics, when they're interesting, are fine. But when they're relatively meaningless, I can't see the point of them. And they just fill time. I mean, I'd much rather tell people something that I can see, something that's mildly amusing, anything like that, rather than just simply go through endless statistics. One thing one has to say is that none of us, no one, is going to please everyone all the time. There are going to be, as it were, the die-hard cricket listeners in Yorkshire or Lancashire or wherever who are going to say, well, this bloke held rabbits on about anything and everything. He should tell us more about the cricket. And of course that's going to happen. And the other way around, if people stick to the cricket and everything else, some people are going to say, well, why doesn't he tell us a bit more about what's happening all around? You know, I mean, you can't please everyone all the time, but you've got to try and please the majority.
And obviously, cricket's well known for its superstitions. Batsman will put on one pad before the other or have a lucky pair of socks, whatever they might have. Do you have anything? Do you have to psych yourself up before you go into the commentary box?
No, absolutely nothing at all. Good heavens, no. Absolutely. All I concentrate on trying to get myself to the right place on the right time.
And I wonder briefly before we go, you obviously commentate with other people. You never quite perhaps know who is going to be on your shift. As you say, you do a quarter of an hour, once an hour on Test Match Special. Does the dynamic always have to work, or is it a sort of pleasure doing it with someone new?
I mean, it's always fun. You work out. Comments, men in the court, you've got 20-minute spells, and you've got some of the first time. You discover very quickly how they like to work, and you play along with it as much as you can. I mean, when you're old and hoary like me and you've been at it for so many years, you can just adapt to these things fairly easily. And I think it's very important that we do and make newcomers feel at home as quickly and as easily as we can.
The ever-adaptable Henry Blofeld, thank you so much for joining us on the line.
My dear old thing, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. And that was Henry Blofeld of Test Match Special on the Blower from London, getting his voice ready for this week's second test against South Africa. And as much as these iconic sports programmes are famed for their commentators, they're also not short of a good theme tune or two. Here are some of our favourites. This is Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bound, where we're doing a sports commentator special. Before that rather wonderful montage of some sports theme tunes, more of them later in the show, you heard the none more fruity tones of Henry Blofeld. Have you ever wondered, though, what a sports broadcast sounds like in Russia? Vasily Solovyov is Russia's top golf commentator and is the main figure skating commentator for NTV, Russia's third terrestrial channel. He's worked at every Olympics since 1996, and Peter Van Dijk caught up with him at home across the Moscow River from Gorky Park.
Ничего еще никто не сказал. Народ уже аплодирует. Ну и друзья.
I started as a sports commentator 20 years ago already. I'm only 36, but I came on TV when I was 18 because my mother was working on sports television for 20 years, and she said, "Would you like to be an interpreter or the editor?" I said, "Yes, for a few months." It was in 1994, and since that, I'm a sports commentator as well.
What do you commentate on, and how did you come to those particular sports?
It's easy. I was an editor and interpreter. I made texts for our chief Burkov, for Mayorov, the great commentator. But I'm such a man. I'm not sitting on a place. I'm also trying to do something. Can I make a story, TV story? Yes, you can. What would you like? I don't know, maybe. And my mother came and said, "There is a lot of themes in golf, you know." I said, "Golf? A lot of themes?" "Yes, look, there is a lot of tapes in the corner we received from IMG. It was our partners. A lot of golf. Nobody take it. Take it." I saw golf. What is it? Jack Nicklaus, Niklaus, who is it? Arnold Palmer, the Open Championship. I tried to understand what is it. I went to the... first club, golf club in Russia.
Почему тогда это закручено в эту сторону?
Вот замком. Очень,
это же так, последнее неудобно. Раз,
время популярное. И вот, например, Tiger Woods, он тоже играет с этим хватом.
Уже удобнее.
Так что...
Next, figure skating. I didn't even think about it. Just figure skating and figure skating. But, of course, everybody understood that I know about music a lot. Because my grandfather is a coach. But my grandmother is an opera singer, and my aunt is a pianist, and I was taught music from the very early ages. So only I knew in our department what's the difference between Чайковский and Шнитке.
Артур Дмитриев на разминке чисто приземлил 4 оборота, но в программе с аналогичного элемента...
Those two sports are incredibly different. And also, in terms of Russia, incredibly different, because here, very few people play golf, and everyone ice skates, and the ice skating after the hockey is probably the biggest Olympic sport. So, as a commentator with these two sports, do you have to change your mindset when you talk about them?
Every time in golf, I'm trying to explain, like, from the very, very beginning.
US Open оказался сущим издевательством над игроками и зрителями.
Here is the greatest tournament. Here is the greatest players. Here is the process. We have had 150 people. Now we have only 70.
Джастин Леннард, Иан Питер, Джефф Огилви.
These two are the main favorites. So we are watching for them. But look, the great shot. So it's like I'm explaining for my mother or grandmother something simple and similar to make this transmission more interesting. And in figure skating, the main difference is that everybody knows everything. If you will say something wrong, they will kill you. If you will not say something right, they will kill you. For example, figure skater, you say, "This is a great figure skater. She's so sense of music, wonderful jumps, she's so cute." But next day, for me, will come a man who made a dress for her. "You didn't say anything about dress. It was so wonderful." Really, I'm not joking. And it's unbelievable. It's like politics, like another world. And this is the main difference for me.
Some Russian commentators that I hear, they get very personal with the sportsmen, with the players. They can't resist giving a little advice. "You should have done this. If only you'd done that." Do you find that when you watch sport, and do you feel yourself doing that?
Yes, I can say that when I have a lot of friends in figure skating.
Они отстают от Евгения на 55 сотых и 60.
Слуцкая, Плющенко, Ягудин.
Евгений Плющенко получил в своей в своем катании низкую оценку за хореографию.
And I was criticized a little bit that I'm talking about them like I'm talking on a kitchen. Because when you are talking about Tiger Woods, you are so full of respect and he is a great star. Слуцка is also a great star. Why are you talking about her that she's like a girl from your yard? And I changed it a little bit, and I'm trying, of course, not to speak in that way. So I'm trying to be very accurate, or I will be killed in internet.
Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Ну да, так оно и есть.
That was Russian commentator Vasily Solovyov talking to Peter Van Dyke.
The Olympics are coming to London and to Monaco 24. From the 27th of July and throughout the Games, we'll be going faster, higher and stronger, bringing some of the icons of the Games into Midori House, as well as taking Midori House out on the road with a series of special shows from across the city. Monocle 24, keeping a sporting eye and an ear on the Olympics.
For the latest Monocle news, previews of upcoming films, glimpses of the new issue and the inside scoop on all our retail ventures and new products, you need to do one simple thing. Subscribe to the free Monocle Bulletin. Sign up now at monocle.com. Let's stay in touch.
This is Monocle 24, where you've tuned into Culture with me, Robert Bound, for our very special show, exploring the art of sports commentary on this first week of the London 2012 Olympic Games. We now move to New Zealand. Moving sheep from one part of a farm to another is more often credited with inducing sleep than sporting passion. Not in New Zealand, it seems. The television programme A Dog Show, in which herding dogs compete by moving sheep through various obstacles, ran uninterrupted for 16 years, and its reruns continue to appear in the Kiwi airwaves. It hypnotised audiences with a mix of canines, ovines and their two-legged masterminds. Our Auckland correspondent Federico Monsalve hopped on a train to the outskirts of Wellington in pursuit of the show's producer Frank Tawley to find out what exactly dog trialling is, what made it such successful TV and how crucial the commentator's role was in this hairy undertaking.
Frank, must be the one.
Hello, Frank.
Tawley.
And so we have two types of dog that operate or are used on farms. One is called a heading dog, and that is a dog that doesn't bark, that uses its speed and movement to manipulate and move the sheep around.
So this is the sort of Jedi of the dog world.
You could say that, yes. And then you have the noisy fella. The noisy dogs are known as hunterways, and they are the ones that use noise. They bark, and they drive the sheep away from them in the main. We decided we would run two competitions built within the program. For the hunterways, the dogs held on the mark with one man, and then six sheep are released from a pen. The man, using voice commands and or whistles, then drives the sheep, and used to drive the sheep up a hillside through a series of markers, zigzagging, and then they would pass them through the pegs at the top. And so the judge, when he's looking at, or the judges, when they're looking at the run, would be looking to see the positioning of the dog to make sure the sheep move smoothly and as evenly as possible. But to put the pressure on, of course, there is a time limit.
Impossible victory, half a nose. And that's it for Gary Brennan.
If I was to go to a producer nowadays and say I would love to do a show about sheep moving from one place to another, I mean, it doesn't sound like the most exciting thing, does it?
I hear where you're coming from. I mean, it sounds absolutely ludicrous. But that was enhanced predominantly by John Gordon with his commentary.
You know, over the past 6 weeks, we've had 24 runs, but the sheep have won 13 of them, hitting off man and dog. But tonight's four trophy-seeking guns are out to redress the balance.
John Gordon, because of his love of dogs, and he was a dog trialer in his own right, he was the one who, if you like, made the show to some extent, who brought the show to the townspeople and gave them the explanation of what was going on, because the sheep were the enemy and the dogs were the good guys.
It's not one of the cleverest sheds we've had, but it's successful to this stage. He's got to get the dogs behind this other mob.
Back, sit down, Tweed.
You can see the tension lines in his young face.
Sit, Tweed. Sit down, Tweed.
Run, Graham, run, 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 run.
Sit down there, Tweed. Come on,
ran out of steam.
Here, Fleet.
But he's completed a shed, and he will get a score, though the points for the next one will come off the first pen, 2.5 off.
And so he would build tension, and he would always say, oh, those sheep, why aren't they working? Yo. And that was a lovely move from that dog, Jed. Oh, that was a beautiful move. And so he involved, if you like, the viewing public with his style of commentary. And I don't know whether it would have worked without him because of his knowledge of dog trialing, and he knew the people. So he had enormous background about each and every trialist who was participating in the show. Again, because of his involvement in dog trialing, he knew the strengths of some of those dogs. You know, he had a lovely bark, or a lovely moving dog, a biddable dog, or whatever. So he had an intimate knowledge of all of them, and that must have helped. But then John is also a wordsmith. He has a love of words, a love of phrases, and spontaneously he would be able to come out with phrases that would capture the imagination.
Yeah, he was really shoving them with the shoulder. They seem a bit stickier in the spinal. Well, this half of it. Sticky and wobbly, rather like a jelly. That's how Barry's knees might be feeling right now, because they don't look very cooperative sheep. They look as if they'd be better on a circus merry-go-round.
A dog show had a big following, not just amongst farmers, but also amongst sort of city slickers like myself that just found the show very intriguing. Why do you think that is?
I think for New Zealanders do acknowledge almost subliminally that agriculture is vital. Back then, because we are talking in the late 80s, back then most New Zealanders probably felt as though they had a direct involvement with agriculture, with farming. Either their mum and dad worked on farms or owned a farm, maybe their relations did, maybe they had farm visits when they were kids. But these days, because of the growing gap, if you like, between town and country, there isn't quite that same involvement. So I think the appeal of both Country Canada and a dog show was in the fact, or is in the fact, that they realise its importance to the New Zealand economy, and they feel as though they are a part of what makes us New Zealanders.
Escapism as well.
Escapism, well, a dream, I suppose. You know, capturing the lifestyle, it appears as though every farmer gets out of bed and the sun is always shining and things are going smoothly. We don't show the mud. We don't show the fact that they've had to go and see the bank manager because they're a bit behind with their loan repayments. Or we don't show the fact that the price of lamb is so low that they can barely make it economic, or that wool prices are down, or any of that nature. We deal with them, but we deal with them empathetically and sympathetically, and that seems to be what is the attraction.
Well, that winds up the individual competition of this series, but not the series itself, because next week we're back for the annual inter-island competition.
That was Frank Tawley talking to Federico Monsalve in Wellington. Still to come in part two, we'll be in Australia to hear how the leading racing commentator tells the steeds apart. We'll be in New York to hear from baseball's voice of the Yankees. And we'll end up in Ireland to hear the dulcet tones of Wishy Fogarty, Gaelic football's best loved voice. First to Australia, where Greg Miles is the leading race caller. With 31 Melbourne Cups to his name, he's a veteran of the sport. His love affair with racing started very early on, first through listening to the staccato description of horses galloping towards a finish line, then with a visit to the track, he was hooked. Here, he tells Claire Aird just what it takes to call Australia's biggest horse race.
But it is all So You Think. Look at him go. This is poetry in racing. So You Think won it eased up by 3 or 4. Elko pops second.
What do you think you have to have as a person to begin with to be a good race caller?
First thing you need to be a good race caller is to be in love with racing. You've got to love the sport first, not decide that you want to be a broadcaster and then pick a sport. No, horse racing will do. I think you've got to be passionate about it because it's 24/7. You know, nowadays we race every day of the week, and it's not about just turning up on a Saturday and calling the horses. It's about following the form and being very diligent about that, and particularly these days. There's so much information that's available that the man in the street's got as much information as you have. So you've got to be spot on in your game and know your form and do your homework.
Can you ever overcall a horse?
Yes, no doubt about it. You've got to be very, very careful and mindful of the fact that, say that for an example, like a Maccabi Diva Melbourne Cup when all eyes are on her, or when Black Caviar's racing and everyone's watching one horse, you've still got to be mindful there are people who've had a bet on all the other runners. So you've got to be careful that you don't concentrate too much on one horse and lose the flow of the race completely, because if the unexpected happens and that horse fails, then you've lost the thread of the race altogether.
Portland Singer away fast down on the inside. Kampski going over their heels, and so is Like a Falcon.
To Maccabi the average listener, it always sounds like race callers are speaking at 100 miles an hour.
Well, I don't think I do. People say you talk fast, but I don't think I do. I think what it is with race calling, and particularly in Australia, is that we try and cram a lot of information into a short space of time. Say, for a 1,200 metre race, you've got about a minute and a quarter at the very most by the time they jump to the time the race is over. We try and call the race as if you're calling it to a blind person so that they can close their eyes and imagine how the race is being run. That's been the Australian style. It's a lot different in other countries, but that's what we've been brought up on, and principally that's what Australian race callers still do.
Excellent runs to second. Olazoon runs on, but a champion becomes a legend. Maccabi Diva has won it from either Olazoon.
A champion becomes a legend is one of the phrases that you're very well known for, and that was Maccabi Diva. Do you rehearse the phrases? Do you go through the phrases in your mind, or do they come out on the spur of the moment?
Look, I'd have to say that I certainly did rehearse that one. 9 times out of 10, though, it's all off the cuff, spur of the moment stuff, and I think that's the essence of an exciting race call. But with Maccabi Diva, I recall clearly the day before I was doing a radio program, and we had Bruce McAvaney on as one of our guests, and he said this will be the most important race that Greg has ever called, and I'm sure he's got a line ready to deliver. It was a lot like me when Cathy Freeman won the Olympic medal in Sydney. And it hit me like a brick. I thought, I haven't got a line ready for her yet. So I had quite a sleepless night until I'd rolled a few different ideas over in my mind, and I thought, well, if she wins and she wins clearly, that's what I'll say, something about a champion becoming a legend, because that's pretty much what was happening, I guess. So fortunately for me, when she peeled out and made her run, it was pretty apparent a long way out that she was going to win the race, and I was able to say what I planned to say, but it's not something I like to do too often.
We join Greg Miles for his call of the Emirates Melbourne Cup. He began in 1981. We hope he has a great call.
Tell me about the relationship between a race caller and the racing fraternity, so jockeys, trainers and the rest.
I've had a very good sort of an arrangement and friendship with quite a lot of the jockeys and trainers over the years, and every now and again you might have to be critical, because that's our job and they don't like that, obviously. But, you know, in the main, I think we get on pretty well.
Now, Greg, you have been doing this for some time. What keeps you excited?
The thing about horse racing is that every day is different. There's never been one race run exactly the same again. So it's always a bit of an adventure for me. But even though to an outside observer it might just be horses running around in a circle on a green track and that's it, but to the followers of the game, there's always something new and exciting coming through, and I guess that's what keeps you interested and keeps you going.
What are the most memorable horses for you?
Boy, I've been very, very fortunate to call some great champions. I loved Bone Crusher. Northerly was a sensation. I dubbed him the Fighting Tiger, and he kept on stepping up to the plate and winning those tight races. Sunline was a wonderful mare. Of course, Maccabi Diva. And now an outstanding mare that'll be remembered by everyone for a long time, called Black Caviar.
The pride of Australia is the greatest show on earth. Black Caviar won it by three lengths.
I've seen some of the great champions in the last 30 years, and I think I've been blessed that I've been lucky enough to be calling in that time to be a little part of their great careers.
And that was Greg Miles talking to Claire Aird in Sydney. And now it's time for a musical interlude, time for some more of those wonderful sporting theme tunes that we're so fond of. This is Culture with me, Robert Bound, where we're celebrating the art of sports commentary, and some classic theme tunes too. Now that Chinese athletes are the dominant force at the Olympics, Chinese sports commentators are increasingly in demand to follow their stories and share them with the millions watching back home. Wang Dong is one such commentator. Born in China and educated in the US, he straddles two worlds, providing commentary in Chinese for the domestic audience and in English for viewers around the rest of the world. Monocle Shanghai correspondent Justin Bergman sat down with him for a chat just before he boarded his flight to London.
I guess sports is always in my bones, so to speak, my blood, and I love sports. And ever since I was a kid, and I got involved in sports, and I was trained to be a table tennis player, which I never made it. In a nutshell, sports is just like my passion. You know, a day without sports to me is like not a completion of this day. So, you know, always... I have always been keen on sports, sports news, sports development, you know, trade, whatever, anything related to sports, or especially, shall we say, sports stories with human interest, etc.
And when you were learning how to do this, did you model yourself after anybody in China or in the West? Anybody famous?
Bob Costa probably has given me a lot of influence, I would say, because, of course, in China, in the past, we got Song Shixiong, although his voice, to me right now, is a little bit too sharp. And I'm just saying, back in the States, ever since I went to study there, I graduated from CUNY, City University of New York, and during that time of my study, I, again, was very keen on sports. Bob Costa, I would say, at that time, gave me a lot of influence. And some other sports anchors, I love their dynamic feeding, dynamic style, and also very vivid delivery, and you know, these punchy lines, etc. I think, you know, overall, I would say I've been strongly influenced by American sports broadcast style quite a bit. Yes.
Well, and what's the difference between being a commentator in China versus a commentator in the U.S.?
I would say that probably in China, up to this point, most commentators would like to give you stats, facts, and in a very objective way, which is fine. Of course, sometimes it could be partial. Back in the States or in Western countries, I guess sports commentators or personalities would like to show you their individual style a bit more, you know, sometimes even a little bit inclination. And I think also during their commentary work, they will try to mingle a lot of anecdotes, if you will, and interesting stories, and in other words, to liven up the atmosphere. I think this is something, you know, as a Chinese commentator, we should learn more, I guess, in that sense, because I guess it has a lot to do with our culture. In Chinese culture, it could be sort of like, I won't say overly subdued, but subdued in a way, not to show too much of your personality or your stance, whatever. But I think, you know, it would be great just to, you know, get yourself included or involved and let your audience know a little bit about yourself, which is something we should learn from Western or American announcers, etc.
Can you tell me what the most incredible event you've had to cover, the highlight of your career so far?
I think, you know, I covered a lot of events. I think my first experience also was a memorable one. I think that really sort of like led me on. I remember that was with Hong Kong Star TV. I was their anchor, their news anchor. I went to cover the 1994 World Swimming and Diving Championships in Rome. As much as I loved that sport then, I really didn't know technically too much about that. Thanks to one of my color commentators who actually was a former national champion from the Chinese diving team. We worked out very well, and I learned a lot how to, you know, really adjust yourself to the technical part, also how to get your teammate involved, to be a team, to do the coverage well, etc. I think that was a great experience. That was my starting point, I should say. I think, you know, given that I covered so much, I think, you know, to cover, for example, the Beijing Olympics was another pinnacle to me. Witnessing Liu Xiang, Chinese national hero, who at that time withdrew from the event, was a painful experience, and how to handle it, how to comment well, and how to actually understand from his point of view, how to let our audience calm down, was quite an experience. I think it was a learning process to me as well.
Is it difficult when you're commentating on a sport like badminton to make this exciting, or do you have no problems with certain sports? Are they all fairly exciting?
I think that in general, sport is sport. You know, the beauty of sport is that it's really the competitiveness is always there. It's always exciting to watch. But I think it depends on, for example, if you talk about badminton, mostly Chinese, the Chinese team probably will sweep it or, you know, do very well there. I mean, Lin Dan will be Lin Dan, Super Dan will be there, for example, the Olympic champion who is going to defend his title in London. I think if he does win again, it will be his second title in the Olympics, and it's going to be exciting, and probably you will be excited as well. You might just, I cannot even predict myself, I might just, you know, share some tears as well. I might just, you know, be very, very happy to see them. I will share the happy moment, that sheer happy moment with my audience by saying credit to him. He's been struggling so hard to maintain his level like this at the top. In his peak form, however, he's done it. He's there. Who knows? 4 years later, down the line, if he's going to be in the Olympics again, it's going to be so exciting. You can't even predict that. It's going to be such a difficult moment for him to say goodbye to the Olympics. Although you don't want to see that happen, he himself has already said that this will be his last Olympics. So it's going to be very difficult for me to predict that moment. But I think it's going to be exciting. Yes.
And that was Wang Dong talking to Monocle's Justin Bergman.
Every week, Monocle's Jonathan Openshaw takes a look at the inspirational people behind some of the world's most fascinating businesses. We'll find out what they've learned from their triumphs and mistakes, how they manage their time, and what drives them on to success. No bulls or bears, just real people, real businesses, and real stories. That's The Entrepreneurs, presented in association with Pictet, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 London time here on Monocle 24 and also available on our Timeshift player at monocle.com and via iTunes.
It started with a shop in London's Marylebone, and now Monocle has stores in New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong and a shop in Osaka. And then there's the Monocle Cafe in Tokyo. Come in to find exclusive collaborations with brands we believe in. From Barenna jackets to Porter luggage. Great for gifts, even better for personal treats. And if you're missing an issue from your Monocle archive, we can soon fix that. Visit monocle.com for store addresses and opening times. The Monocle Shop. Carefully crafted design, proud of its provenance.
Welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, and our sports commentator special on this, the first week of the London 2012 Olympic Games. And now it's time to hop across the Pacific to the US. New Yorker John Sterling is among America's best-known sports commentators. Having broadcast every New York Yankees baseball game since 1989, he's also perhaps the busiest. Known for his wide range of idiosyncratic catchphrases relating to each and every player, the voice of the Yankees is one of the last remaining play-by-play legends in the radio business. Monocle's Barrett Austin caught up with Sterling just before the first pitch at Yankee Stadium for a look at how he got started and how he's managed to set himself apart from all the others.
It'll be a 3-1, swung on and driven down the right field line. Fair, the game is over. It's a fair ball into the corner. Benamy scores. Johnny Damon gets his sixth hit of the day, a ribby single. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win!
I'm John Sterling, and I broadcast the Yankee games and have for the last 24 years.
And it seems that growing up, most children are interested in being pro athletes, whether it's for fame or fortune or simply the love of the game. But it seems that from an early age, the idea of being an announcer is something that really appealed to you. What was it about announcing games that caught your attention from a young age?
Well, actually, I wanted to be on the air, period. And when I realized when I was in my young teens that I wasn't going to be good enough to play pro ball, it fueled my desire. Then I knew what I was doing. But I think I kind of knew what I was going to do, and I just wanted to get on the air. And my career started with, you know, just being a kid at a radio station and doing everything, and then it went from being disc jockey to talk, and then from talk to what I love most of all, sports, and here I am.
And growing up and watching the games, were you a Yankees fan?
Yes, actually, my dad made me a Yankee fan at a very, very tender age. And, of course, I wanted to be Mel Allen. But one thing, I really knew what I wanted to do from the time I was a kid. And so I listened to everyone and everything to prepare myself. And I think now I had the ability to do it, but I think that really helped me.
And growing up in New York City, what was your first memory of the New York Yankees?
Well, my dad taking me to games and the Yankees winning a lot. They are the most famous name in team sports, without question. And they've won the most, and they have the biggest name, and they have more people love them and more people hate them. My getting the Yankee job, something I told all my high school buddies I was going to do, is a one in a million chance. It's all the whole business is luck and timing and who's in power who likes you. Doesn't mean you're any good. But the guy in power who decides it, the man, as they say, and that's what happened with me, I've been able to, you know, last because I'm giving the fans something they like. But getting the job is much tougher than doing the job, I have found.
And I think oftentimes, even if a game isn't particularly interesting, would you say it's your role to make it seem interesting to listeners?
No question. This is the entertainment business. And you have to entertain in some form. And if the game is one-sided, I'll talk to my partner and I'll go into stories and different things like that. Yeah, you have to keep the audience entertained. What do you think they're listening for? So, no, I'm a great believer in that.
And something everyone likes to talk about is the amazing roster of catchphrases that you've developed for a number of things, chief among them, home run calls. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it never was meant to be that. You know, it's now grown to be a cottage industry. Back when I did the Nets and Bernard King was a great scorer, or when I did the Atlanta Hawks and Dominique Wilkins was a great, you know, he'd do something fabulous. I never used Wilkins, by the way. If your name is Dominique, you don't need to use Wilkins. And so he would hit a great shot of what make a play, and I'd say, Dominique is magnifique. And I played off on that to others. We had a guard who's now coaching Washington, Randy Whitman, was a very good jump shooter. And he'd come off a pick and hit a jump shot, and I'd say, you know, Randy delivers a Whitman sampler. So with the Yankees, I think it started with calling Bernie Williams Burn Baby Burn, and the Giambino and the Bamtino. And anyway, it got so popular, thank God, that it's become a cottage industry. Now everyone expects me to come up right away with a name or a nickname for everyone who ever hits a home run. And sometimes the writers give me names to use, and sometimes the public does. So I never knew it would go on like this.
That was American commentator John Sterling talking to Monocle's Barrett Austin. You're listening to a special sports commentator's edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. We end our journey around the world of sports commentary back next to the UK in Ireland, where Uisce Fogarty is a legend in Irish sports commentary. He works for Radio Kerry in the South West and has an extraordinary turn of phrase. He's colourful, philosophical, urgent. You name it, he can spin everything a listener needs out of commentary. I spoke to him in his studio at Radio Kerry.
The transition from being a player of Gaelic football to a commentator,
Was that an easy thing? Did you always kind of, do you look at it from a player's perspective as you commentate, or can you look at it from a TV viewer's or a radio listener's point of view?
Yeah, that's a very incisive question, all right, Rob. And I must say that I looked at it from a former player's perspective. And not alone was I a former player, but I was also a former referee. I refereed at the highest level here in Ireland, and not for about 10 years. And not alone that, but I had trained and coached and managed football teams in all age groups. And I had been involved in all aspects of my club here in Killarney. So It gave me a great insight, really, into what I would be looking at. And from that point of view, it gave me a huge advantage, I must say, becoming a commentator and a presenter and an interviewer.
And is it in that sense, Wishy, that you can maybe educate your listeners to what a player might be thinking in this situation, what the coach might be thinking in a certain situation, a critical bit of play on the pitch? Do you think it sometimes takes away from the sometimes spirited amateurism of other commentators?
I would think that it gives me a great advantage anyway, Rob. I'd say not alone what I see in the pitch and what I see off the ball and what's happening and the moves, but not alone that, but I can visualise and put myself into the dressing rooms before the game and at half time and wonder and visualise what's happening inside there, having been through to all myself and having been through to the highest level and having been managed and coached by great managers and great trainers. And I would certainly say that it would give me an advantage. That would be for other people to decide, maybe more than other commentators, because I would say that having been there and having done that, it definitely puts you right into the thick of the action. And I think, Rob, you can give your listeners an added view of what's happening, and you can really paint the picture for them, and you know what's important.
Well, that's an interesting point. I wanted to ask you this next, Wishy, about painting a picture for your listeners. Your listeners are sort of how you live and you die by your listeners. Am I right?
You're spot on. You do indeed.
But I guess that you've got a very intimate relationship with them. You might be hundreds of miles away. You might be commentating on a match or discussing a topic that maybe isn't right in their backyard. But you're obviously right. You're right in their ears. You're right in their living rooms or their kitchens. Is that something you think about when you are broadcasting, or do you have to do this thing that people sometimes say is just to pretend you're only talking to one person?
Yeah, I think when you're broadcasting a game, you have to think in that respect. My mantra when I'm broadcasting a game is, I imagine I live in a county, Kerry, down in the south of Ireland, and it's a very mountainous county, and there's beautiful lakes, and it's on the Atlantic coast. And I always visualise myself talking to a man who's sitting down by his fireside, sitting in a cottage on the side of Mount Brandon, down in the west of this county, listening to the game, because Kerry football is a religion, and people are brought up with it, and people it's part and parcel of their life. So yes, I would try to paint a picture for a person, and that would go out to each and every listener in. And we'd have a massive listenership in Radio Kerry, not alone here in Ireland, but also on the internet. And I would like the listener to be able to go out at night, have a pint of Guinness, and say to his friends, I heard Wishy saying today this, that, and the next thing, and be able to paint the picture for them inside in the pub that he had heard me doing.
And that's the amazing thing, Wishy, that the painting of that picture. Is this something that I wonder if you, when you started off, maybe you don't anymore, but do you have notes? Do you have extensive notes, or do you just riff when you open the mic? Do you just go for it?
No, Rob, I never wrote a note in my life, and I broadcast games from America and from England and Australia with Radio Kerry, and from all over Ireland, but I've never written a note, because you must talk about what you see, not about what you have written, because if you're talking about what you write, it means that you're not talking off the cuff, as the fella says, and I like to just talk as what I see. The very first time I became involved in radio 20 years ago, the man in charge of sport in Radio Kerry asked me to do a commentary, and he said, I'll give you one tip, he said, Wishy, he said, just speak about what you see and nothing else.
That's and are those words ringing in your ears when you, when you're broadcasting right up to today? I mean, is that, does that stay salient advice?
It's exactly what I do, and it's my mantra, and it's my philosophy. I speak on what I see, and people mightn't like what I speak at times if you tell the truth and your own team are playing and you say that the referee is very biased towards the opposition or towards your own team. I speak what I see, and that's my mantra, is exactly.
I wanted to ask you, you name-checked a poet, Rishi. When, I mean, clearly sports commentary attains the status of poetry sometimes in high, moments of high drama, or maybe sometimes when there's a lull in the play and you have to describe what's going on, perhaps in the crowd or on the sidelines of the pitch. I wondered if there were a couple of moments from your own career or from sports broadcasts that you've listened to that have sort of, you've pricked up your ears and listened and realised you were listening to something better than the everyday commentary.
Yeah, no doubt at all about it. There was one famous All-Ireland final that Kerry won in Croke Park a number of years ago. And when the game was come to close and I knew we had won it, if we had time, I'd coach. I'm from Kerry, where the great footballers came from. And I went off in this spiel, what we'd call it here. And what I said was, you asked what's the secret of Kerry. And often I wish that I knew. 'Twill doubtless seem odd, though born on the sod. That question has puzzled me too. You see the lad work in the meadow as he tosses the hay without rest, and he yearns for the lintening shadows as the sun slowly sinks in the west. Then he hocks to the thud of a football, and things more important must yield, for nothing must stay in a Kerry man's way when the ball bounces high in the field.
Those are the dulcet tones of Rishi Fogarty. So that's just about all we have time for this week. I'm off to don my Lycra. Got 100 metres final to run. It's just a hobby, really. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. This show was produced by the collective effort of Katie Bilboa, Holly Fisher and Dawn Trump. And James Bacon worked his magic to bring it all together. What a good sport. We'll play out on Masquinada by Tambo Trio, guiding us through some classic Latin American football commentary from the 1970 Football World Cup, among other things. Thanks for tuning in.
Bola para Rivelino, Rivelino para Jair, correu pela ponta esquerda, traiu o Paquete, passou por ele, lança a pelota Pelé, Pelé dominou, Carlos Alberto está livre, correu, Carlinho, atirou, gol!